Hi everyone, Camille here. It's 6 p.m. in Lisbon, 8 p.m. in Nairobi, and 10 a.m. in Vancouver. We're live, you're listening to Cosmic, exploring the world of change via the arts. Thank you for tuning in. We keep exploring the art space in season 3 of the show, talking to artists and thinkers from around the world with the mission to decipher what the arts are offering to modern society today, what works, what doesn't, and how the artistic practice affects change at the personal level, at the collective level, asking ourselves, what can we use, replicate, improve? What should we use to craft the reality we want to see out there? You know that at Cosmic we are obsessed with the subtle realm, with storytelling, with narratives, with how the arts and the broader field of culture shape the common sense of the world. Last week, I had a fascinating chat with Mark Garrett, who co-founded an organization called Further Field. That was in 96 in London, that he co-founded Further Field, not our chat. And since then, the organization has initiated a solid number of experiments in artistic co-creation across digital and physical networks. They call it a decenter for art and technology. And this is exactly what we're going to cover today: decentralization, democratization, empowering self-organized collectives, disruption of the art space, technological enablers such as blockchain, and network culture. So why does it matter? Well, number one, it seems that those are key ingredients to surviving the art world in the 21st century. Always work. And two, in the context of our investigation on art and change, we might want to be fluent on decentralized network culture, blockchain for artists, and the edges in general, because this is often where the future is taking roots. Also, with this podcast, I want to amplify big philosophical questions that Further Field and others have been asking for decades. Who owns the culture? Who owns culture? How to deal with this awkward relationship between, I quote, the felt value of the arts to the majority and the financial value of arts to a minority? I'm the man. Can the cultural industry technically be countered? Movie studios, advertising firms, social media conglomerates, galleries, and so on? I'm talking about this devastating ability the capitalistic machine has to enslave any subculture or underground movement and feed the monster with it. In other words, the most interesting cultural movements always start at the very edge or deep underground and then get turned into something you can buy on Amazon. Is that a problem? Okay, you got the story. It's about power and a sprout of democratization that now needs a lot of water and sunlight. So let me get a watering can, prepare a set of fertile music tracks, and let's get the light of Mark Garrett shining. I learned a lot. If you enjoy these topics, you might want to bring your own watering can and cosmic light to this movement. There's a lot of precious work to be done. So yeah, let's get started. We have 24 seconds to go get a yogurt, a glass of wine or something, and we dive in. Chapter 1, Harnessing Tech While Reclaiming the Narratives of Disruption.
The common feeling by people that used to use the word disruption is that neoliberalism or corrupted business groups have exploited the term disruption for their own uses. But some people still use disruption because they want to claim the narrative of what disruption can be. Disruption further field as a group is that we don't literally say the word disruption, but we're disrupting, say, different forms of engagement in culture, such as issues around class, technology, around, so because we use like DIY technology, and also problems around hierarchy within arts culture. So we like to disrupt the narratives within that context around how language is used from top down, which disrupts actually the independence of artists. The narrative that comes down traditionally, say, in the arts culture is very much about individualism and genius in line with market forces. And that, in a way, is a kind of a cultural colonial hack on people's creative expression And that usually gets taught within art degrees and other academia, which thankfully has been being critiqued by post-colonial studies.
Disruption always takes us to interesting places. It's a word taking conversation to the edges, past, present, and future. It questions the speed of evolution and who shapes the narratives of evolution.
You might want to disrupt a position in history. So you might want to rewrite or reclaim something in history. And within academia, that's happening by, say, in South Africa, by people that are writing from an autoethnographic perspective. And that's like working class black people that are writing about their own arts culture on their own terms, which hasn't been referenced in the canon of arts, even in Africa, let alone anywhere else. So, in a sense, you're disrupting the control mechanisms. Because I think academia now is being disrupted by a whole new generation of people, but it's taken a long time and it's still not there yet. And art culture's the same. It's very slow. It's dominated by particular people that are very out of touch with the needs of new generations that are moving in, asking for change through their kinds of creative voices.
was an opportune moment to dive into the most interesting technological enablers of disruption. And one of them is cryptocurrency. Cryptocurrencies, for those of you who are not fluent yet on this topic, a cryptocurrency is a digital or virtual currency designed to work as a medium of exchange. It uses cryptography to secure and verify transactions, as well as to control the creation of new units of a particular cryptocurrency. So essentially, cryptocurrencies are limited entries in a database that no one can change unless specific conditions are fulfilled.
But the important things about it is that they're decentralized exchanges, so there's no central ownership over the economy of that or the processes that are taking place.
Works with blockchain technology, first of all, a system in which a record of transactions made in Bitcoin or another cryptocurrency are maintained across several computers that are linked in a peer-to-peer network. So usually when we think about blockchain, we often think about money and economics.
So it opens up new ideas of how to use digital networks and decentralized systems beyond just money, if you see what I mean, and also organizations that follow that kind of way of existing. And some of those organizations are called DAOs, and they're decentralized autonomous organizations. And they're entities that exist without interventions. And so they're meant to be incorruptible and run by a set of rules or business rules, in a sense, is whatever you agree that to be.
So blockchain is not just about how to manage money, and that's where it all becomes relevant to the art space of the 21st century.
Dream of a land my soul is from, I read stroke on the drum. Shades of delight, go you, rich as the night, afro
A project called Disco. Basically, it's a decentralized manifesto, and they're doing really good stuff. So they're kind of exploring different worlds that can be developed through blockchains, new types of commons, AI, feminist economics, cooperatives, and these are kind of like some of the contemporary new movements that are being formed using blockchain that are quite radical. They're not just based around money. One of the reasons why we wrote the book Artists Rethinking the Blockchain, and that was a disruption of the bro narrative, where you have Silicon Valley ideology dominating blockchain culture, and we just want to say, wait a minute, this isn't about rich people getting richer. We can use this technology and do something more interesting in a contemporary context that's not just typical old-fashioned bro culture, you know, which is really just disguised. Like Google was once kind of meant to be nice, and but in a sense it ended up the same and even more sinister, like Facebook has, than some of the predecessors, arguably. Instructs California or Silicon Valley is that they're already programmed through particular business initiatives and funding and business angels, etc., to create platforms and blockchain culture around the main aim of earning more money. That means something, you know. It's a centralized commodity and sovereignty around technology itself. It's proprietorial. So, and when I say proprietorial, I mean it's you've got your first engagement with technology that's corporate is that it's proprietary. But the larger engagement is proprietorial, which is patriarchal. So that's kind of like it has ownership over your interaction. And so there's a psychology involved, there's a body politic in our relationship with technology. that's the difference in a sense. Already you've got a kind of almost like a high status, almost godly status, like with Elon Musk. And you know, you get these people that kind of like own culture, own narrative, millionaires, and people just keep on allowing it to happen. If you're on Amazon, you keep on buying more Amazon products, you get addicted within this proprietorial relationship, and you're kind of funding your own downfall, so to speak. or our own downfall, you know.
Silicon Valley and big tech in general is definitely a cultural force that we need to consider and that urgently needs disruption. I experienced this firsthand myself, by the way, in a previous life during my time in San Francisco. This is the culture in which I was fully immersed, and my whole world was about these narratives and business models. And it took me years to shape new perspectives on value creation, on what is harmful, what is fair, and peeling off layers and layers of what had become my identity. So disrupting this culture is possible, and with tools like blockchain, new manifestos and value creation models can be safeguarded. By who? By networks.
He let her rain to heaven's light.
Chapter 2, Artist Networks as Game Changers. Preparing for the interview and talking to Mark, I realized how little I knew about what's already going on. I found out that there are really interesting projects out there. For instance, one lab they set up is called DECAL, Decentralized Arts Lab. And this is what I was touching on earlier when mentioning this awkward relationship between the felt value of the arts to the majority and the financial value of the arts to a minority. The arts garner great wealth, while it is harder than ever to sustain arts practice even in the world's richest cities.
All I want is, yeah, all I need
is. So let's illustrate maybe with a project called Culture Stake, part of DECAL.
There's a project called Culture Stake, which is a web-based voting and connection system for decentralized cultural decision-making and investment. Basically, anyone can download its kind of context and some of the code that's been made towards it on GitHub. getting rid of the kind of hierarchy of curation around art projects. It can go anywhere in the world where you get everyday people deciding of what projects are voted for, rather than say just say two curators or three curators at the top of the tree.
Another example in place since 2006, when Further Field set up a manifesto called Daiwo, the Daiwo Manifesto. Daiwo as in do it with others, do it with others.
Daiwo Manifesto was originally in 2006, where it was setting up a way of specifically existing within an art context where you get a group of artists that are engaged in making art together collectively on a peer-to-peer process. So in other words, everyone gets an even vote. So you can have 100 artists curating one show of their own show rather than, say, one curator. So that breaks down the kind of the dominance of the narrative of the exhibition to exist in a collective right rather than through an authoritarian right. And the important thing to remember, if you go into a Daiwo project, you go by the rules of what that Daiwo project is collectively exploring. So, you know, you've got kind of the structure of Daiwo, which is decentralization and critiquing hierarchy. But these aren't specifically what the project says itself. So in other words, you just use those rules as a guideline to make that project happen. And also, that's not going to be your main project. You may be an individual artist that's making art somewhere else, and that's not going to take over your life. It might exist as this project in its own right, and then you're doing something completely different in your art making on another day. So it allows people to explore other parts of themselves that they haven't considered exist within the art making process. Making art is a freedom in its own right, but sometimes you need particular tools or skills to pull us out of ourselves to find new things out of of how we're engaging in that kind of creative action.
And here comes one more time an insight that we keep touching on with different guests and thinkers at Cosmic when looking at the future of the world with a dramatic tone and how things should be. Have a listen.
This idea of new worlds only exists within localities rather than an overall picture that everyone must have kind of lived by.
New worlds only exist within localities. This is so important, so inspiring. Thank you, Mark. And talking about new worlds, let's move towards our next chapter and contemplate what the 21st century looks like, viewed from here. Chapter 3, COVID and the world in the 21st century.
Sense the virus has kind of re-emphasized the issues, I think, what other people have suspected as well. But we've been doing projects in relation, say, how do we survive 21st century? You know, what skills do we need to exist in the 21st century? And the virus has kind of emphasized that, what will we need to exist beyond that now? We know there's healthcare is a big issue, and also care in the community is also because austerity has kind of demolished a lot of care in the community in the UK and the US and certain parts of Europe. So the big issue is how can everyday people reclaim aspects of their care, and what does that look like? And so you've got some artists, like, say, who we've been working with, like Cassie Thornton, who's got a project called Hologram. It's a kind of like a viral distribution system for non-expert healthcare, and it ensures that all caretakers are cared for and regards properly supporting someone else's well-being as a therapeutic act in itself.
I place my trust in a fool.
think it's about breaking down the control of what things we are used to and what they are, and they have their own kind of boxes holding the behaviors of what we're used to that they do. One example is, like, say, yoga. So when you go to yoga, you go there to kind of relax and do kind of exercises that are good for your body. But if you're going through the process of austerity, you go to yoga and you don't know whether you've got the home the next week because the rent's not being paid because you're highly in debt, then you know, it's going to be difficult for people to go do yoga when they're worrying about being thrown onto the streets. And so Cassie Thornton was doing yoga classes where people can talk about debt as well. So and they were very well attended. And so she crosses over these different things where she disrupts the kind of traditional narrative of what things should be. So this kind of thing where you're crossing over into this different arena where you're disrupting the kinds of agendas and ideologies of those spaces. It allows us to kind of reevaluate our relationship with the world, and we just have to find new ways to connect or step over those bridges. To radically change regarding what the arts are is the concept of cultural ownership, of who owns the culture, because whoever feels owns the culture at the moment is not everyday artists, or it's the kind of institutions that dominate. And so therefore it's a colonial relationship of the world through artists and through its nationhood. And I just think that needs to be really deconstructed in such a way where even, I know there's people would shudder with this, my suggestion, but where you break down kind of well-known museums and galleries and where you distribute them around the country into smaller venues where the funding for these large, massive institutions that take an awful lot of money can be broken down and shared within communities as part of a process of connecting to people more through the artistic arrangement or engagement. And because I just think it's a very dishonest relationship, pretending to be nice through hierarchy process, and it's just a lie, and it needs to be broken down in such a way where certain groups aren't allowed to be run by particular elite people.
Eating food too embarrassing to list. I know why there's an aching in your wrist. Now you're book fast pissed.
Reciting all the times you kick yourself, you missed. Reciting all the times you kick yourself, you missed.
Does the domination really lie in the relationship with galleries and the people that exist around those communities that may or may not be part of that gallery or common space? And if you look around, especially around London, and actually if you go around the country, a lot of the public spaces, some of them are good and they're well-meaning, but they're bourgeois. They do not have the common good as part of the soul or the makeup of the infrastructures.
The others in your head, and the voices said, pretend to everyone you wish that you were dead. Pretend to everyone you wish that you were dead.
Unfortunately, you get the same types of people running these mid-upper range art museums and galleries where it's their values that are seen, but not the values of the community around them. And so therefore that needs to change. These spaces need to be broken down into smaller spaces and redistributed around the country. What you don't want is what the Tate has done, where they've got just big galleries, one in Margate, one in Liverpool, two in London. What you want is a much more broken down version of that, where it's not about the legacy of colonialism. There needs to be new conversations around kind of like indigenousness, class, race, gender, and these all need to be evaluated according to the areas of where they are. Freedom, if you allow freedom, is it doesn't look like what you want it to at the end. But that's what democracy is, or that's what fairness is. It's not going to be the picture that you want at the end, and it's not going to have the same rulers or the same people administrating that context. The real psychology behind this is about how you can be less addicted to the power relationship of the culture that you belong to. Is infrastructural. So it's not about the art object, it's about art becoming much more integrated and re-editing what we see as infrastructures dominating our lives. 21st century art is infrastructural. Thank you.
21st century art is infrastructural. Oh, this is so good. So good, so important. Again, thank you very much, Mark. This conversation is a very compelling starting point for those who haven't opened this door, these doors yet. And I can see how promising the offer is. Network culture, manifestos, such as the Daiwo, Do It With Others manifesto, combined with technological enablers like blockchain and others, are igniting and safeguarding a constellation of democratization processes in the art space as well as in other sectors. It's like a whole new playground has been opening up, and one that can technically roll out new power structures, more fairness in the world, and new experiences for artists. So I guess it's now a matter of maximizing participation, spreading the word, and getting involved. Beyond this podcast, a great starting point is Furtherfield's website, furtherfield.org, where you can browse projects and a rich library of resources that will take you all across the wonderful world of decentralization of arts and technology. Mark Garrett is also hosting a podcast at Furtherfield, going deep on those topics with guests from across their network. The podcast explores how the collaborative, imaginative fieldwork of artists, techies, and activists is informing how we organize, imagine, and build solidarity, good health, and post-capitalist realities, working together and supporting others to do the same. I'll link it on our website in the episode notes. Thank you to the Cosmic team for the cosmic work. And thank you all for tuning in from all around the world now. It's very gratifying to see the community expanding. Let us know your thoughts, questions, ideas, feedbacks. This is only the beginning. So keep shaking things up, and I'll speak to you next week. Ciao. I adore